O Father, let me hold my heart in my folded hands. Teach me to saturate my prayers with thy love. Give me the simple, sincere devotion of a child toward thee. Teach me to realize thy nearness behind the voice of my prayer. Teach me to breathe thy breath in my own breathing. Teach me to feel thee in my emotion. Teach me to know that thy wisdom is my understanding. Teach me to feel thy all-pervading life in my life. Flood my senses with thy light. This one is called, May I Reap the Greatest Harvest in the Short Season of Earthly Life. My allotted plot of consciousness was small. I let it be barren, producing no crops of life-sustaining culture, and the bleak winter of dead opportunities is approaching with its shroud of unproductivity. My lot is small and my season is short, yet I want a mighty harvest. So forging through the kingdoms within, I conquered many states of new acquirements, and now the territory of my consciousness is large. But Father Divine, I have billions of my hungry thought families and their little ones to feed. So thou must know that I need a big harvest of thy whispers in the short season of earth life. The waters of craving fell many times, and yet I kept my soil of culture untilled. Now I am using the motor plow of my incessant scientific search for thee. May thy unseen hand, O divine sower, throw the living seeds of thy thoughts into the cultivated furrows of my mind. In the short season of earthly life, I want to reap the largest harvest of thy cosmic contact. I want to build a rainbow bridge of self-realization. The gulf of ages lay between thee and me, and widened as the waters of my oblivion of thee grew through the centuries. I stand by this rocky shore of matter, looking for thy smooth shore of peace beyond. My inner architects are building for me a bridge of my constant remembrance of thee. The girders of my strength of self-control are all being riveted together. My dreams of thee are gathering together to make a rainbow bridge of self-realization by which I will soon reach thee. Om peace. This is the last class. So if you have any questions and you feel that something that you came here to hear you haven't heard, or questions that haven't been answered, we should start there. Then we take a week off, and then on the 13th, I start the Bhagavad Gita class, working off of Swamiji's The Essence of the Bhagavad Gita Commentary. We're going to be doing 10 pages a week, except the first week we do a little more because it's the introductory material. I'll print up what the reading will be for the first few weeks, but you can just start reading the book. But basically, we'll do 10 pages a week, and we'll do it for 12 weeks, which will take us not very far into the book, then we'll breathe for a month or so, then we'll do it again. So it'll probably take us about 2 years. But at the end of it, we'll really know the book, and we'll really know the Gita, which will be fun for all of us. We'll be able to say erudite things like, yes, in chapter 6, verse 12, Krishna says, by going really slowly, that'll help, we'll be there. So, I mean, there's no point in, and you can drop in and out of it because every verse actually stands alone. So you can come for as much or as little as you can and we'll record it. But that's all later. Now, we're here. So, does anyone have any questions that you would like me to answer, or subjects you want me to address before I go on tonight, from last week or any time? It's your last chance. Yes, Brenda, I can always count on you.
And one of the categories is kind of...
These categories from last week, the categories of development as they apply to prayer. Prayer is our subject for tonight, so this is a very good question, okay?
It is.
Right.
Our prayers...
Okay.
Is it appropriate, I guess?
Well, the question is, what is the point of prayer? And inasmuch as last week I talked about the desire to control your environment is not a very high state of development, and sometimes prayer might be just a desperate attempt to make somebody conform to your desires, how does it all come together? I'm not going to push that aside. I'm not going to answer you yet, because that's basically what I'm going to talk about tonight. So let me see if there's any unrelated questions, and then I'll just start in. Because once I start that, we're not coming back. Yes? The question is, how do you forgive people who've hurt you? You know, Swamiji sometimes speaks in beautiful terms about the word forgiveness, and sometimes he doesn't like that word very much. Because there's a certain amount of, and I say this respectfully and not personally, there's a certain amount of ego in, I forgive you. You know, that I'm the one who's standing here who had all the rights in the situation. You violated my rights. You have done a terrible thing, but I still forgive you. Okay, now, that's better than hating them forever. But the whole premise that you're working from, which is that people owe you things and when they behave badly, then you're going to be magnanimous. It can be carried out in such a way that it's another form of bondage. That if you never let go of the essential thought that people owe you a certain way of behaving, and when they violate that, you'll still be magnanimous, you're still on the same wheel that's just going to spin around and hurt you again. Okay, so part of the problem is the reason we have so much trouble forgiving is because we're still, the problem is not in their behavior, it's way back in the thought that the world owes me a certain kind of behavior and that people owe me a perfection that they may not be able to deliver, for example. This person is supposed to be the kind of person that I demand that they be, and rather than having a compassionate relationship with who this person actually is and really wanting to help them to grow toward the light, we act like the queen, you know, dispensing favors one way or another. Now, that's the pitfall of that whole way of thinking. And generally speaking, if you're having trouble forgiving, really has nothing to do with that person. It has entirely to do with the fact that you yourself have not yet come to the point of spiritual and personal maturity where you realize that the world owes you nothing. You know, the way we... maturity is a very good word because it's demonstrated so much by the way little children behave. There was a little girl, a baby who was born into our congregation many years ago. She's a grown woman now. And she had the sourest look on her face for like the first whole year of her life. She just looked like a petulant old woman. She did not have a baby's consciousness at all. She had the consciousness of an old woman, probably wealthy, very unpleasant, who had been waited on her whole life. And she just was outraged by the circumstances in which she found herself. And really, it really was her consciousness. I mean, she was a perfectly fine little baby, but underneath it, there was always that demeanor. You could just see it on her face. She just looked like an old lady. And after about a year, she sort of relaxed and began to look more like a child. And I jokingly said to her parents, you know, she that whole first year, she just looked like an old woman who wondered where the servants were. And I said, now she seems to have cheered up. And then the father began to laugh. He said, that's because she found her servants, her mother and me. Which, of course, anybody who's raised children definitely knows that. You're just the absolute slave of those children. And very few children have the maturity on any level to appreciate what their parents are doing for them. It's just the given that parents are there to provide for my every whim. I mean, why not? And usually children are quite old before it occurs to them. I mean, old, maybe even having children of their own, before they have any recognition of how much they simply took from their parents. And it can be, the parents give it joyfully. That's what they decide to do. Sometimes they do it accidentally and don't know what they're getting into, but nonetheless, they do it joyfully. But still, it's just a complete sacrifice. But if we don't ever come out of that, we have this point of view on life that things are just, people are supposed to conform to my desires. And it's called childish. And the point is, though, that we reach a certain point where we feel that our standards have enough objective validity that therefore we're somehow justified now in imposing them on others. But still, the underlying principle is always, you were supposed to take care of me. And you failed to take care of me. You may even have promised to take care of me. But many people, including ourselves, promise many things that we sincerely mean at the moment but have no capacity to meet. Or people are simply scoundrels. And they just are scoundrels. And we don't have to forgive them or not forgive them. Their own scoundrelness will catch up with them sooner or later. As Swamiji said, they're God's children, not ours, thank God. And we don't have to raise them, you know. And once again, the whole concept of forgiving them implies all kinds of realities there. Now, let's go back to the other side of it, the positive side of it, which is, as Swami said so simply once, he said, if I expected perfection of my friends, I would be a very lonely man, you know? It's like people just aren't going to be perfect. And if you're going to make your love always conditional, which is, I will love you up till and only as long as you please me in this little piece of paper that I passed around, which you still can't look at. There's all different ways, all different aspects of life can be defined by those levels. The second level of development, in which we try to control our environment, relationships are, it's an even trade. It's always, if you do it, I'll do it. If you don't, I won't. You know, it's not any question of, I love you, I want to. It's that if you give to me, I'll give to you. If you don't give to me, I won't give to you. You know, here's the list of household chores. You do yours, I do mine. Here's your shelf on the refrigerator. Here's my shelf. Here's my checkbook. Here's your checkbook. You know, and it's better than the lowest level, which is what's in it for me. You know, just the parasitic relationship. All I want is that you take care of me. That's the baby's relationship to a certain extent, although we tend not to think of babies as parasites, but they really are. You know, they just take. They haven't the foggiest idea. I mean, they give the sort of gurgling cheerfulness, but YMCA and other things. Others. Anybody. Now, believe me, I can say that really easily, but karmic issues are really deep. You know, I've struggled with relationships in my life for decades. And I've discovered that eventually you win. But I've had relationships taken 20, 25, 30 years to resolve. Just, you know, just deep hurts that were not just in this incarnation. But there's two ways to be wrong. One way to be wrong is to know that you're wrong. And that even though I can think of all the reasons why I'm justified, once I finish doing all that, I know that I'm wrong. Because it's just not spiritually correct. But I'm not going to pretend that I don't feel this way. It's very, very unhealthy to say a spiritual person would feel this way, therefore I feel this way. You not only then have your problem, but you have this layer of falseness on top of it, and you have a real mess. So it's fine to just stand where you stand. But don't pretend that it's the top of the mountain. Just admit that you're just, you know, lolling around in some dark ravine and that eventually you'll get your equipment together and you'll start up the hill. But just know where you're standing. I'll just tell you this in terms of forgiveness. I had this extremely difficult relationship with this woman at Ananda Village. She's not there anymore, not because of me, but she was there for many years and we were in a situation where we saw each other every day. We had so much bad blood between us, not so much even from the present, but just ours was a very complex relationship, I think, for many incarnations of, you know, just, you know, the kind of betrayals that you see around you. What happens when you don't forgive someone? Well, what happens is you get to meet them again, except you can't really quite remember why you dislike them so much. I'll back up a step further. We had occasionally in our community, the greater Ananda, I'm not speaking of just Palo Alto, unfortunate things happen in interpersonal relationships. Fortunately, they don't happen often, but occasionally they do, and this was a humdinger. And one man, I wrote about this in my book, one man was in love with another woman who wasn't his wife. After 10 years, he finally just said to Swami, can't do this. So he separated from his wife and took up with the other woman, and it happened very fast because it had just been there for so long to happen. And everybody was really close friends, you know. So it was not like, and the problem with Ananda is when these things happen, well, now we have many communities. Nobody ever leaves the fold altogether, but at least you can leave the geography. The next day after that happened, Swamiji invited both women to come to his house to cook dinner for the husband, Swamiji, and a group of other friends. And when Swamiji suggested that maybe so-and-so and so-and-so could come over and cook dinner, and wouldn't that be lovely, and we can invite him, and then we can invite... And I think it was I who said, sir, don't you remember what happened? He said, sure, I remember. And then he went like this. They're going to have to get over it sometime. He said, they might as well start now. And then he said, otherwise, he said, some next incarnation, he said, they'll meet each other, and they'll dislike each other intensely, but they won't remember why. And then what happens is you project onto the present situation all these reasons, all these things you think this person is doing to you. Every time they open their mouth, you think they're doing something to you. They're not, but they did. And you get very, very confused. At least now they would know exactly what it was all about. So they came, and as I tell in that story, the wife, who was, of course, the one who was in the most pain, she just thought, well, if Swami thinks I can do this, I guess I can. And she said she just walked in and it was just like a state of grace. She just looked at everybody, including her now former husband and what would soon be his new wife, and just thought, how many incarnations have we lived? How many relationships have we had with each other? How many forms? She said, what is the point? Why would I hold on to this? He never meant ill. It was just something that couldn't be helped. And she said, she fell from that high state, as she put it, you know, over the course of the time it took her to really resolve it. But because she could do it once, she knew she could do it. It always became the high mark. And the high mark was just, he's a good man, I know that. She's a good woman. These things happen. You know, if it had been I in reverse roles, you know, who knows what would have happened. But that's real spirituality. Well, coming back to this relationship that I was in with this woman, we were victims of the past. And because we met so young on our spiritual journey, I didn't have the perspective that I would bring to such a situation now. And I just projected, and she projected onto me, what I believe were really bad things we'd done to each other in the past, the kind of bad things that people do, that neither of us had any intention or capacity to do now, but we couldn't tell. So it went on for 15 or 20 years like that. And finally, we both grew enough to just be over it. And we were on a pilgrimage to Master Shrines in Southern California. And we were dressed in these white clothes. We'd had a discipleship initiation. We just had this beautiful event. And we had reconciled to a certain extent. But she was very moved by the experience. And she came up. We were in a restaurant, in a buffet. We were having tea. And we had, you know, teacups in our hands. And she comes up to me, and she just spoke to me. And with real heartfelt energy, apologized for, you know, the way she had responded to me, and I equally apologized to her, and we both agreed that wasn't it wonderful that the karma was over and how nice it was to be free. I was holding a cup of Earl Grey tea in my hand like that. She was dressed in a white dress. I have no idea how it happened. I just took the cup and I poured it down the front of her dress. I mean, I didn't consciously do it deliberately, but it was as if I had. I just took the cup and I just poured it out on her dress. Nothing, nobody bumped me, nothing. I just poured it down her dress. Just this big stain, you know, tea like this.